out there, everybody. And thank y'all so much for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And I can't do this alone. I have the king of fizzy water, the lord of the manor, Kyle Hissen.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here in Skeleton Studios drinking a...
What do you got?
It's not quite fizzy water. This is more like a tea. This is a liquid death, rest in peach.
Oh.
It's like a iced tea with agave and with vitamins in it. And I like it, man. Tastes good.
Dude, you're so healthy with all of the AG1 and the liquid death and the gummies and all this, that, and the other. Look, you're going to live forever.
I hope so. Well, that's because it makes up for all the cheeseburgers and pizza and other stuff I eat, right? I got to balance it out.
That's why you work out. It's why you do the things you do so you can eat like trash every now and again.
I still will drink a Dr. Pepper or two a week, but I've cut way back. Like I used to be a 3 or 4 Dr. Pepper a day kind of guy. I only probably have 2 or 3 in a week. Most of the time I'm drinking coffee or like fizzy water. I do like Arnold Palmer's. Like I do like a good iced tea.
Dude,
I'm with you. I'm with you is I'm literally with you. Like on Friday nights when we go have fun, that's when I let myself consume the little things that aren't the best for you, right?
But I don't eat candy. I don't eat any candy or any cookies. I don't eat any of that stuff during the week because I save it for Friday in case it gets hairy at the table. And then that's what it is. We just start going to town on it. So.
Yeah, but that's what I've been up to. Trying new teas, new flavors like that. If you get yourself, you can go on Amazon. We're not endorsed by them, but you can get yourself a lot of different fizzy waters and iced teas and things. Celsius, that's another one I've recently had that I liked. It's crazy how the market has blown up. Like, did you know like Sonic? The fast food joint, they make alcoholic beverages. I didn't even know that until we went to Alabama. They literally, Sonic makes their own alcoholic drinks. Man, I'm like, what?
No idea.
I'm not into that. I remember when we were young, like there was only beer and then there was wine coolers, you know, like Bartles and James and stuff, Boone's Farm. But do you remember Zima? When that first came, that was like a craze.
I remember drinking Zimas.
For like 2 years is all I remember it.
And I remember you had to put a Jolly Rancher in them.
You could, yeah.
Yeah, because they tasted a little, you know what that stuff was like?
I don't think that company exists anymore.
Yeah, it was made by Coors.
Yeah, but I mean, they don't sell Zima no more.
Oh, they don't?
No, dude. Man. That was only like 2 years.
All that was TV static in a bottle. That's all Zima was.
I think it was because I was a weakling and I wasn't man enough to drink any hard liquor. And so I would drink the Zima, you know, you're talking about like,
well, because you remember what we called them in high school were cheerleader beers.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, I mean,
I still can't drink hard liquor. Like I always thought that was something I'd grow into. Man, I don't mind a bourbon or whatever, but like I can have one. That's it. My brother-in-law and them, they go hard on that stuff. That's all they like.
I can't do it.
I always thought I would do it. My father used to drink, shout out to Pops. It's his birthday today.
Aha!
73 years young. But he
can't be stopped. Human cockroach.
The human cockroach. He used to always drink scotch and stuff. And I'd be thinking, man, I'd take a sip.
I remember those.
Tastes like drinking that thinner you use over there for your minis.
Right.
Tastes terrible. I don't know how anybody be like, oh man, can you taste the peat in there? Right. I'm like, nah, man.
No.
Tastes horrible.
All I taste is the burn. Like, that's it.
I do like a dirty martini.
I like the idea of drinking. I've always liked the idea of holding the tumbler.
I like the act of
drinking. Holding the tumbler with like the round marble in it for the cold.
Right? I know what you mean. Yeah, yeah.
And then you've got your bourbon or your scotch or whatever flavorful whiskey that you want in there. And then you've got your cigar and you're like in a big library. I love the idea of that. The problem is mine has to be tea. It would have to be like sweet tea in there where nobody knew because then I could do it. But no,
like I said, I like martinis, but I think it's because when I was a kid, James Bond planted that seed.
Yeah.
Where you're like, dude, if you want to be a badass, you get you a martini.
Well, that was always the idea behind shots is watching all the old Westerns growing up,
the Westerns,
right?
Yeah.
Everybody was just, you ordered up a slug of whiskey. Everybody get a shot of whiskey and you got your handgun and a shot of whiskey. And it always turned out in violence, but I mean, it didn't start that way, but I can't do shots.
I hear you. I hear you.
I don't know. We do a bunch. I mean, Kyle and I like, what are those called? Buttery nipples? No, I'm kidding.
No, dude, you want to throw up. That's the kind of stuff.
Any that kind stuff of sweet stuff. Yeah.
Well, let's get into some news.
Yeah,
Check this out. Cam, I want to talk about this famous case. I don't know if you're familiar with a man named Jan Wolski.
The only Jan I'm familiar with is the Latvian eagle. I know Giannis. and Jan Hammer.
Jan Hammer. Yeah, yeah. He wrote the music intro for Miami Vice. That's correct. Now, this must have been a relative of his, Jan Walski. Now, this took place on May 10th, 1978. Jan Walski at the time was 71 years old.
All right.
And was passing through a forest near Emlichen in eastern Poland in his horse-drawn cart when he noticed two individuals ahead, walking in the same direction, but with supple jumps, like divers on the seabed. Like they were walking weird, you know, like
bouncing.
Bouncing
on the moon.
Uh-huh. When one of them approached a muddy patch, his feet seemed to slide across the mud. When Walski caught up with the strangers, they walked alongside the horse and cart for a while, then jumped on board and sat down gently, one on each side, gesturing to Walski to just carry on. So, Walski drove on while the strangers exchanged some words in an unknown language. Shortly as the cart approached a clearing in the forest, a strange, almost transparent white object could be seen hanging in the air about 70 meters away. It was emitting a faint humming sound. Now, Walski described the object similar to a short bus, but with a roof like on a barn. He said it was about 5 meters in length, 3 meters in width, and about 2.5 meters in height. It shone as if it was nickel-plated. There were no visible windows seen. At its four corners and halfway up it, it had on the outside were barrels with black vertical rods running through them and carrying what looked like spirals, rather reminiscent of corkscrews. Now, these black rods were rotating very fast. The corkscrews were emitting a range of different colors, and the barrels seemed to have been the source of the humming. When closer to the object, Walski said that the sound was like that of bumblebees in flight. The craft's surface was smooth, stainless, and seamless. At a height of around 50 centimeters from the ground was suspended a lift held by four thin cables attached above the entrance to the craft, which had descended as the trio approached. Stepping on the platform, one of the entities invited Walski to come aboard, gesturing to him that he should grasp one of the cables. After rising rapidly, the lift stopped in front of an opening, and Walski was motioned inside. So he did. Inside, Walski stepped into the chamber with walls that were almost black and saw two more beings identical to the first two. The chamber, he said, was rectangular. There was no internal lighting other than the daylight from the open door. The walls, the floor, and ceiling were a grayish black, the same color as the overalls of the occupants. The floor was shining, as though it were polished. The walls were smooth and hard to the touch, and made of a material resembling glass. After the four walls were seats, each fastened by two black cables. No apparatus was seen inside the contraption, with the exception of two black tubes that ran from one gable wall to the other, and two holes about 30 centimeters apart, into each one of those which entities inserted alternately a small black rod from floor to ceiling. The height was about 1.8 meters. Now, on the floor of this cabin were about 10 crows or rooks, which seemed to be paralyzed, though they could move their heads and eyes. The four identical beings of indeterminate sex were about 1.4 to 1.5 meters tall and had delicate, slim figures. They were dressed in tight-fitting, flexible one-piece suits of a grayish-black rubber-like material, covering the entire body except the faces and their hands. They had no pockets, no belts, or any fasteners were seen. Their legs seemed thicker than those of normal men. A hump was visible on the shoulders, as though something was contained under the suits. The slim, greenish-colored hands had five fingers, between which were five membranes, like webbing, except for a gap between the thumb and forefinger. He said their heads were relatively large, with faces of an olive-green or greenish-brown hue, having high cheekbones that gave them an Asiatic appearance. The eyes were almond-shaped, very long, they were dark and appeared to lack any whites of any kind. In the place of the nose, there was only a slight protuberance with two small vertical openings. The mouth was straight and thin. Their teeth were white, No hair was visible on their face. I think he's describing the grays, Cam. This is exactly what the grays are always described as looking like.
It's exactly what it sounds like.
He says, when these beings smiled, the mouth twisted to one side with the effect of a grimace. Their speech was rapid and delicate. They had a polite, gentle demeanor, and Wolski felt no fear while in their presence. The beings indicated to Wolski that he should take off his clothes, and one of them helped him undo his shirt buttons. Facing him less than 2 meters away, one of the beings held in each hand a gray disc-shaped object. Said the word Buzz OS on it. No, I'm kidding.
No.
It said that it seemed to be attached to the hand by something like a suction pad. The disc were vibrating and emitting a dull humming sound. Wolski was positioned with one side facing towards the entity holding the discs. Then, with his back towards him, and finally with one on the other side, he began to feel strange. Wolski's arms were raised alternately by the entities, whose fingers were very cold. And during the process, he smelled an odor similar to that of burning sulfur, a smell that lingered in his clothing for days afterwards. When ready, he was shown the way out. They bowed and said goodbye. The beings were smiling, and he said the same lift that took him down almost to the ground was right by his horse and cart. And Wolski turned around to look at the contraption. Two or three of the beings were watching him from the entrance, and he did not remember seeing them depart. So this was a true, as depicted by Jan Wolski, alien abduction that happened back in May of 1978 in Poland. It's a famous case. He was given tests all for years and years after the incident, and his story never changed. And he didn't, you know, profit from it. But the old farmer said, "No, man, this happened." And it's like so many other cases of alien abduction. Some people feel fear. Some people are terrified. They have post-traumatic stress disorder because of it. And other people simply aren't affected by it. They weren't scared. They feel like it was just a weird encounter. Kind of cool. Like they feel special. Like I got chosen. Of all the creatures flying around in space, they chose me.
When he's describing what he saw, I couldn't help but think about Men in Black. Like a lot of the characteristics they were describing is kind of that awkwardness of the way they describe certain encounters of Men in Black.
Yeah.
It is so weird. And then they tried to use crazy alien space magic to get his shirt off. Take your shirt off, Paw.
Yeah.
You know, and he's like, back on up now.
And the disc things that were suctioning cup to the hand, it's like an iPad, right?
Yeah.
It's like they're holding. Like,
they said it was buzzing.
It was.
Like it was emitting some sort of sound, like a vibration. Dude, that's crazy. What could it have been? Maybe it's a scanner. That's what that thing's doing, is scanning him.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they're just really efficient. You know, like the people with the iPads at Chick-fil-A drive-thrus. I mean, they're very, very efficient.
Here we go.
They do not mess around. I mean, don't be deterred by a long line. They are efficient.
But here's the thing, too. It's not the iPad that makes them efficient, because Kyle and I both have one, and we're not really that efficient. So
I agree. But you know what I'm saying? Like for hundreds of years, not hundreds. I'm sorry.
Thousands. Sorry, folks. He meant thousands of years he's waited in line for chicken sandwiches with pickles.
Yeah. For 100 years. Okay. Maybe 100 years. People have been having drive-thrus.
At least 100 days.
Why did it take so long for somebody to figure out how to do it efficiently? Same thing with Amazon. Like we've literally had mail. They're like, dude, there's no way we could ship it to you
any faster.
Faster than 5 days. And then all of a sudden this Bezos guy comes and goes, nah, I can get it to you in 5 hours.
That's right.
And he can. And he does, and that's why he's the richest man in the world. Or maybe second richest, but boy, I love me some Amazon.
Man, oh man, I love waiting in line for 1,000 years. Here we go. I got something for you, bud. Of course, listen, I've got family in Georgia, so that's kind of one of those deals. And then, of course, our homie Lon, he loves to send me things. The odder, the better. And that's what I love about him. So get a load of this. I was 10 years of age when this incident occurred. I and my family were living in an apartment complex at the time in Dunwoody, Georgia. I was walking with my mother to the bus stop. Suddenly, about 5 to 10 feet away, there was an apartment building about 15 to 20 foot between or here. It says, to the right side of my mother and I, there were what seemed to be 2 or 3 of these humanoid beings, which were covered in what seemed to be white robes and emitting bright light around their bodies. This bright light is what probably caught my attention in the first place. I pointed to them and asked my mother what those people were, something along those lines. My mother remembered me asking her this, but she did not see anything. She told me she just felt a very strong presence. The fact that she was there with me and remembers me asking the questions is proof to me that it was not a hallucination or a dream. One of these beings was standing in front of the other, one or two behind it. I can't remember the appearance of these beings in the back, but I could clearly see the face of the one standing in the very front. It seemed very human-like and youthful. It had curly hair and a blank stare until I noticed that I was looking, or it noticed that I was looking at it. Then its eyes widened as if it were surprised that I had noticed it. I was not supposed to be able to see them once, and I believe that this being made eye contact with me and then observed us seeing it. Everything on their upper torso was white with a gray tone kind of mixture, including their faces. They were almost transparent, like one would imagine a typical ghostly figure would be. I mentioned only upper torso because I don't recall them having any hands or legs or feet, anything like that. They also seemed to be floating because of this. I turned my head for 1 second and then quickly back. But as I did, I remember seeing them sort of float or hover away back down some stairs that were in the vicinity. Then I lost sight after that. These beings seemed to be conscious of some sort, aware of their surroundings, and did not want to be seen by me or anyone else, but they did seem to be there for a reason. Now, I do not remember anything before or after this event, but my mother told me it started off as a normal day, and after I got back from school, she told me I asked her about the beings. I have sketches that I have drawn, but I can't find them at the moment, but when I do, I will send them if you need them. In the meantime, if you have any information about this or what they possibly could be called or what I may have seen, please let me know. I am now in my mid-20s, and although I have had a few unexplained occurrences throughout my life, none of which were as vivid as this was. I've not seen anything on that level or like this since. Thanks, L. Mm. So three glowing robed beings that only they saw as a child.
Right.
Again, it feels like the machine elves, right?
It's almost like what it is,
oh God, they can see us. And it sounds like you read Lord of the Rings, right? It sounds like an elven character.
That's exactly
what it sounds like. So
I love those stories.
Wacky.
Speaking of stories I like, let's take a break. And when we get back from the break, I'm going to be talking about some stories dealing phantom locomotives. Stick with us, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
People commonly think of ghosts and apparitions, manifesting in only human form. But it seems there is also a global phenomenon of ghostly transportation. People have seen ghostly horse riders, horse-drawn carriages, ghost ships, road vehicles, ghost aircraft, and trains have all been reported all across the world. One place that's no stranger to this phenomenon is the United Kingdom. For some reason, the United Kingdom has a long history with the Phantom Trains. starting off in the southwest of England. The sounds of a phantom locomotive are said to echo along the tracks in a tunnel at Box, Wiltshire, near Woodchester Mansion. The last appearance of this phantom train was in 2001. Although no train was seen, a film crew who spent a night at the building heard thunderous, disembodied banging sounds, which came to a head as the unmistakable sound of a steam train that plowed straight through the old house. The London area also has a few ghost trains. In 1980, a diesel-powered engine called Nimbus was cut up for scrap metal. However, it has been spotted several times since, running along the tracks at the South Tunnel of Hadley Wood Station. A stretch of the Northern Line, which is part of the famous London Underground, is reputed to be haunted by a spectral steam engine between East Finchley Station and Wellington Sidings. During the Second World War, building work commenced on Highgate High Level Station, but the station was never completed. Nevertheless, locals occasionally report hearing a steam train in the area where the track was supposed to have been laid. Lincolnshire is home to a couple of ghostly trains. In the 1920s, a rail crash occurred at Ancombe Bridge near Elsham during foggy weather. 4 people lost their lives in the accident, and ever since, a ghostly train appears at the accident spot, but only during foggy conditions. The train is said to emit a soft glow. At Hallington, near to where the old station stood, many witnesses have reported hearing the sound of an old steam locomotive passing during the night, even though the track was closed in 1956. At Halsall, in Lancashire, a man decided to shoot some video footage at a nature reserve. As he stood on a disused railway bridge filming, he heard the unmistakable sounds of railway carriages speeding along the disused tracks below. But when he looked down, he saw nothing. One story takes place in Scotland, which seems to have several stories all its own. Part of the old Highland Line lies at Dunfail in Moray. The line fell into disuse many years ago, and the track itself was ripped up and removed. However, a ghostly train is said to haunt the route where the tracks once lay. Although the train's interior lights are always blazing, no one is seen inside. It also has been seen passing the site where a nearby station once stood. Other witnesses report being blown backwards by a large rush of air, as if a train had just shot past them at a very high rate of speed. Late one night in 1997, a Mr. and Mrs. Madison drove south along a lonely old road. Suddenly, they heard the whistling and chuffing of a steam locomotive close to the old station at Balquhidder Junction. In the distance, north of their position, they spotted a line of moving lights which looked remarkably like carriages. Shocked, they related their experience to Mr. Madison's father, and to their amazement, he told them that the line was permanently closed by a landslide back in 1965. The most commonly claimed ghost train sightings in Scotland are alleged to take place on the Tay Rail Bridge near Dundee. At around 7:15 p.m. on December 28, 1873, the central spans of the recently constructed Tay Bridge collapsed as a passenger train went across it. The bridge and train plunged into the icy Firth and Tay River below as a force 11 gale howled all around. None of the 75 people aboard survived, and only 60 bodies were ever recovered. Although the recovered carriages were damaged beyond repair, the engine was later salvaged and used again on the line for a few more years. Most of the girders salvaged from the collapsed bridge, were incorporated into a replacement bridge right alongside its remnants. Many witnesses have since reported seeing a brightly lit phantom train speeding along the Tay Bridge on the anniversary of the disaster. The ghostly train is said to disappear in the center of the bridge, as if plunging into the icy waters once more. But the United Kingdom isn't alone in sightings. There are other countries, like Russia, France, Germany, even America, where these phantom trains are seen. Pittsfield, Massachusetts, is home to a ghost train, which has been seen only twice, and both times in 1958. One of the more unusual ghost trains that has been seen is this one, the one in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. In February 1958, a man named John Quirk, who was the owner of the Bridge Lunch Diner at the corner of North and Eagle Street in Pittsfield, was astonished one day during the lunch service when he and several of his patrons watched an old-fashioned steam locomotive barreling down the tracks at a very high rate of speed. The train was heading eastbound, and although it was traveling at a very high rate of speed, Quirk recalled that he could see every detail of the train, right down to the pile of coal in the tender. He stated that the engine was pulling a baggage car and a half dozen coaches. John instantly knew that something wasn't right. He had owned and worked at this diner for several years before the sighting, and he had watched a dozen or so trains go by every single day, so he was more than familiar with what an average train looked like at the time. That's one of the reasons this train stood out. Quirk reported the speeding train to some local railroad officials, and they looked at him like he was crazy. One of the men and John were friends, so giving the friend the benefit of the doubt, he decided he would look into it some more. Well, after a thorough search, he came back to his friend John, told him that what he saw was impossible. There simply were no records indicating an eastbound train to be passing through Pittsfield at that time. And what was more perplexing is the fact that steam engines hadn't been operated on that line for several years. About a month later, the speeding locomotive came rocketing past the diner again. It looked the same, arrived at the same time of day as the last sighting, and once again was barreling down the tracks, headed eastbound. Several patrons and employees saw the train as well. Stephen Strauss and Tim Kautsonikolas saw it and backed up John's outlandish claims. Now, this was not necessarily a good thing for Mr. John Quirk. Many people in the town began to mock him and say that he was losing his mind or simply making up a good story in order to attract business at his diner. But John and several other people all claimed to be bearing witness to the same thing, a steam-powered locomotive pulling five or six coach cars, moving at a high rate of speed eastbound. None of them ever changed their stories. So what was this ghost train witnessed by John and the small group of people? In a 2006 article about the Pittsfield ghost train, Joe Derwin points to an accident in late August of 1893 when an express passenger train headed from Chicago to Boston wrecked near Chester, approximately 30 miles east of Pittsfield. 13 were killed in this wreck. So is this the cause of the phantom train? No one knows. Newspaper articles from late August and early September of 1893 state that the train crashed approximately 1.5 miles below Chester while crossing a weak iron bridge. Two sleeper cars, a buffet car, and a diner car fell into the river below. Now, local maps of the area indicate that this most likely would have been the crossing over the Westfield River, nearly 30 miles away from the diner in Pittsfield. One thing I have to remind you, the ghost train only appeared to people inside the diner. But why? According to newspaper articles, such as the one that appeared in the September 2nd, 1893 edition of the Roanoke Times, the bridge was in the process of being upgraded to support the weight of heavy locomotives, but the work crew had gone to dinner before finishing their work. The train crashed while the workers were eating. The train's passengers were also eating dinner when the bridge collapsed. Newspaper reports state that the survivors were those in the two coach cars, while the victims were those who were in the two buffet or dining cars, for a total of four cars that went into the river. Interestingly, the report of the accident, which appeared in the Ohio Democrat, stated that the train was running 7 minutes behind schedule and probably was speeding in order to make up lost time. On September 8th, the Vermont Phoenix reported that the construction workers were to blame for the disaster. At a hearing held in Boston, the foreman of the bridge company testified that the rivets had been taken out of the bridge's upper cord and were not replaced with drifting pins, and this allowed the bridge to collapse beneath the weight of the locomotive. The crew apparently was going to finish the job after returning from dinner. Since the nearest town with a restaurant would probably have been Pittsfield, perhaps that's the reason why the Phantom Train only appeared to those inside the bridge lunch was because it was the site of a restaurant where the lazy bridge workers had gone for dinner. And maybe the ghost train was intended to be a ghastly reminder of their negligence. I'm inclined to believe that the ghost train, if it existed at all, was indeed the Chicago Limited Express bound for Boston. The train was speeding eastward, as diner owner John Quirk reported in 1958. Newspaper reports indicated that four cars plus the engine fell into the river, while two coach cars and a smoker car remained on the tracks. That makes a total of seven cars plus the engine. All who witnessed the ghost train described a speeding steam locomotive pulling a half dozen coach cars and a baggage car for a total of seven cars plus the engine. Another interesting Phantom Train sighting is the one of the Boston Bridge. In the early morning darkness of August 27, 1891, a steam train derailed off Boston Bridge into Third Creek, just 2 miles west of Statesville, North Carolina, where many were killed. Now, some 125 years later, it is said that every year the Phantom Train repeats its final journey, playing out the crash again and again. At approximately 2:30 a.m., the Richmond and Danville Engine 9 left Statesville after taking on a load of passengers and goods. The train was running behind, and so was in a hurry, as the boarding took longer than expected, and the engineer attempted to make up the time along the way. Less than 5 minutes later, and traveling at 40 miles per hour, the steam engine launched off the north side of the Boston five-span bridge and plummeted to the ground 60 feet below. The engine, tender, baggage and a second-class car, a sleeper, a first-class and a private carriage all crashed into the bushes, rocks, and stream. Estimates say that the sleeper carriage landed 150 feet from where it left the track. Cars ended up on top of each other, crushing those in the carriages below. First class ended up crushing second class, and the private car crushed the public sleeper car. Much of the iron from the tracks was taken with the train, piercing carriages and adding to the already tragic scene. Several survivors made their way on foot to the closest town in order to tell of the crash and to grab hands for the rescue efforts. It took the rest of the night and well into the next day for searchers to locate all the survivors and, of course, all of the dead. Convicts were brought in to help with the search cleanup. It was not until the scene was completely cleared that the full horror of the event could be told. Many of the victims, who did not die in the crash itself, died as they slowly drowned in the waters of the creek below. A Miss Llewellyn Poole told how she held her mother's head clear of the water until her strength faded and was unable to bear the burden any longer. She had to sit there and watch as her body gave up, allowing her mother to drown right before her eyes. The engineer was pinned under the engine's cabin where he died. Next to him were two of the female passengers who had been thrown clear of the first-class carriage all the way to where the locomotive lay. The injured were taken back to Statesville, but as there was no hospital, they were put up and cared for in private homes. The dead were taken to a tobacco warehouse where families and friends could view the bodies of those unidentified. It didn't take long for onlookers to come to the site to have a look at the tragedy for themselves. The coroner came to the conclusion the wreck was caused by the removal of railway spikes, causing the track to become loose. It took 6 years to find the culprits, and two men were convicted after making confessions, while they sat in jail for an unrelated crime. Altogether, 23 people lost their lives in this wreck, and many more were injured, both minor and crippling. The Boston Bridge train wreck would have essentially faded into obscurity if it were not for the events that took place on the location years after the tragedy. Exactly 1 year following the wreck, some people were walking near the bridge when they heard an almost almighty crash and a distinct sound of twisting metal. They immediately made their way over to the sound when they were met by a man in a railway uniform who asked them for the time, even as he stood staring at his own pocket watch. The group ignored him and ran onto the bridge to look below, seeing by moonlight that nothing was there. They turned back to the man, who was now gone. It is believed that the group had run into the elderly baggage master, Hugh Linster. Now, Linster had just been presented with a gold pocket watch for his 30 years of service to the company on the night that the crash happened. In another bizarre sighting, 50 years to the day after the crash, a woman was waiting in her stranded car near the bridge when she was startled by seeing a train come rushing past as if out of nowhere. She could hear the chuffing and see the steam, and then all of a sudden, she heard a tremendous roar of a sound as she watched it derail and crash into the creek below. The noise was tremendous. She frantically made her way to the side of the drop and looked down at the scene below. She could see the wrecked carriages and hear the moans and screams of the trapped and injured. Soon, a car pulled up alongside hers, and she ran to meet the person who got out. It was her husband and the local store owner who had come to help her fix her tire. She yelled and screamed at them to come and help the victims of this crash. But when they arrived, nothing was there. No train, no dead, no injured passengers. She was the first person to actually witness the phantom train of Boston Bridge. People have since claimed to witness this strange event, or at least pieces of it, either the sounds of the train passing or the sound of it derailing and crashing into the ground below. It has become a yearly pilgrimage for ghost hunters and thrill seekers alike. There was even a man killed in 2010 while looking for this ghostly train. The 29-year-old was on the bridge with some friends hoping to get a glimpse of the phantom train when a real train showed up instead. The engineer blew the whistle and tried to slow the train down as much as he could, but it was too late. All but two of the group made it to safety. The man from Charlotte pushed a woman off the side of the bridge to safety. Now she fell 30 or 40 feet and suffered some injuries, but he was struck by the train and killed. Still, some people ventured to the site, and no doubt, this August 27th, just like every other, another group will venture onto the bridge and press their luck. as they attempt to witness the Phantom Train for themselves. Which leaves us with perhaps the most popular Phantom Train in the United States, the Lincoln Ghost Train. Abraham Lincoln was the first U.S. president to be assassinated. It was decided by Lincoln's family and the powers that be to bury the murdered commander-in-chief in his adopted hometown of Springfield, Illinois, rather than in the nation's capital. The result was a massively orchestrated funeral procession by train throughout much of northern United States. On the anniversary of Lincoln's death, it's said that a phantom funeral train is sometimes seen running the route originally taken by the dead president's locomotive. Clocks and watches in towns along the way are said to stop cold as the train passes by. Well, as it turns out, one of our listeners claims to have seen this spectral train one evening. And he says, I'd been transferred to the Hudson Division of the New York Central System and was working the rails on the main line between New York City and Albany. I was on the late shift to start with, since I was a bit of a night owl. And after 6 weeks of stomping the tracks and mending the rails, I was feeling right at home in my new job. Then, just before midnight, on a clear spring night in late April, we got a report of some brush on the track near our station. So, I was sent out to immediately clear it away before the next train came. I had nearly an hour before the next train, and so I didn't hurry as I walked along the rails. It was surprisingly pleasant and rather warm. Overhead, the clouds were obscuring the moon, but the light from my lantern made a cheerful glow in the night. Suddenly, a chilly wind swept over the rails with a whoosh, like a wind just before a thunderstorm. It was so strong that it nearly knocked me over. I staggered backwards, swearing and windmilling my arms to try to keep my balance. I almost dropped the lantern, but I managed to get my balance just before it slipped out of my hand. Shivering because of the sudden cold, I squinted down the track and I saw what looked like a huge blanket of utter darkness rolling towards me. It blanked out the rails, the trees, the sky, everything. Good Lord, what is that? I gasped. I leapt away from the track and started to run back towards the station, but the darkness swept up and over me before I had moved even a yard. The lantern in my hand was snuffed out instantly. I stopped, unable to see more than a few paces around me, and to my right, the rails began to gleam with a strange blue light. I staggered backwards from the tracks, my pulses pounding in fear and dread. What was going on? Then, a headlight of a train pierced the thick darkness. It gleamed blue-white in a strange black fog. And when it appeared, the rails brightened in response. A huge steam engine, draped in black cloth, approached, stacks bellowing from a steady stream of smoke. The brass on the engine gleamed, and it pulled several flat cars along behind it. I stared into the windows of the engine, but I couldn't see any crew. Just at the edge of hearing came the faint sound of music, and it turned to look at the flat cars behind the engine. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I started backing up while just staring ahead and bumped into a nearby tree growing near the tracks. I just watched in disbelief. I know this sounds crazy, but I swear, I think I saw what looked like a couple of semi-translucent, Civil War-dressed men saluting the train as it passed by. And that's when I knew what I was seeing. This was the funeral train of Abraham Lincoln. I had heard about these stories from co-workers and friends in the past, but I thought of it as merely some kind of urban legend. Well, as it turns out, it's real. I've actually spoken to a few other guys who've seen it too. The steam train moved slowly away, and with it went the darkness and the chill and the clouds that had been obscuring the moon. In my hand, the lantern sprang back to life. I blinked a few times and brushed away a tear. As the world around me brightened, I saw the reported brush littering the tracks right in front of me. Mechanically, I cleared it away and made sure the track was safe for the next train. Then I went back to the station. The next morning, all the clocks on the Hudson Division were 6 minutes behind, and all the trains were running 6 minutes late. When I asked the station master about it, he shook his head and told me not to worry. He said this happens every couple of years, and I asked him if it was because of the Lincoln Ghost Train, and he just laughed.
And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. Hope you guys enjoyed those stories. I like those stories. I don't know what it is about that. It's the romanticism, mm-hmm. I guess, of mm-hmm. the railways and the railway system when it first hit this country, back when Vanderbilt and all those guys were developing the railroad system. How cool must it have been to be back in those days when the train travel was first a thing, you know? I don't know. It must have been really cool. I'm not talking about it was cool to build it, but to see it for the first time, you could take a train and go all the way to the West Coast, and what that must have been like for people of that era, where normally it would take months to get there. Now you could be there in a couple days, and how that really brought East and West together and how it changed everything in America. That's what the beginning of the stories. But then these stories persist over time, and there's these tragic events that happen. And for whatever reason, wherever these tragedies transpired, people later will see the ghostly remnants of a moment in time. Like, it'll just replay itself, and people will see that phantom train. Why trains? Why don't we see phantom airliners? Why don't we see
too far up?
You know what I'm saying? Like, why not other types of travel? We don't see ferries, yeah, ferries we don't see and tugboats,
we
and
see
phantom
ships, and we see trains, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, it's like,
oh wait, we have got stories of phantom cars.
Yeah, and truck drivers like and that. Semi. Yeah. I mean, there are a few, but for whatever reason, it's like the train.
It's the romantic idea. At least that's the way I feel. Is for some reason I really enjoy trains. I was never the kid that had them, like the models, right? I never had any of that. But I've always thought it was neat, like you're talking about. But it was mainly, I think, for the travel.
I have never been. I mean, I've been on small trains and subways and things like that. And, you know, like in New Jersey, and you go to.
You're talking about riding a train.
You take like a train from Red Bank to the city and stuff. Like, I've done lots of that, right? But I've always wanted to do like a trans-Canadian railway. I'm sorry, I can't talk. Where you go from, you know, Quebec City all the way over to Vancouver and through the mountains and stuff. How cool would that be, right?
It would be awesome.
Or like to go to Europe and go to Transylvania, you know.
We got
to
go.
And take it by train and stuff. I think I've told it on the podcast before. When Luke was real little, we were taking a plane and we were flying up north.
Oh yeah, yeah,
We were going to Philadelphia, and in the air, he was like, "Where are we landing?" I'm like, "Pennsylvania." He started freaking out because he thought we were going to Transylvania. Yeah. I got something I got to ask you, bro. I know you've probably seen this. I know lots of people have sent it in to us. There's been a couple sightings of some strange looking UFOs. The last couple of weeks, the one was like a Colombian model. Valentina Velez or something like that. She was on a private plane and she was able to film something out the window. Did you see the footage of that? And what?
Yes,
sir. It's crazy, right? And
yes,
there was
sir.
Another one where there was a pilot around 20,000 feet filmed this diamond-shaped object flying by. And it looks like you think a UFO would look like, right? Like the one the pilot shot especially, it kind of looks like Independence Day, what they were flying in Independence Day. My question is, is this thing really flying that fast, this craft, or is it like a Mylar balloon? And because they're passing it, it gives the impression that this thing's flying really fast, but it's not, you know? You see it, and it's so fast, and it's taken out of context. It's hard to tell what it is that they're seeing. And I'm angry that I don't have a better explanation, but I know people send it to me, and I wished I had a better explanation. But it's just, that's my... I mean, like, look at these images here, right?
Okay, so that image that you're showing right there, the one thing that I have seen it whenever they film it as it passes. I will say this. If that is truly the craft, right? Uh-huh. If that's what it is flying the way Bob Lazar said it flies.
I agree.
It is moving in the, So I'm only saying that because of this. If it is something that's not a craft, let's say it is a weather balloon, it is a Mylar balloon, it is something like that, what are the odds of it forming that shape as the plane passes at that exact moment to look exactly like how Bob Lazar describes them flying?
Well, see, and that answer, like the shape of that looks like Flight of the Navigator.
It's exactly right? What it looks like.
And the reason...
Which already makes me always start wondering when you see him after Lazar talked about it, and then Disney releases Flight of the Navigator, you're like, wait a second.
But maybe that's the way they really do look.
That's what I'm saying. Is maybe they knew too.
Like, I'm not shooting it down. I'm not saying this is untrue. I'm saying I think it is. One of the theories is that they're either coming out of the ocean or there's a mothership somewhere and it's sending down. And these are probes. That's why they look tiny. The tic-tac things, they're small. There's no occupants in them.
They're just
if
drones.
If we have drones, why wouldn't something else have drones?
Except their drones are AI-driven. Extremely intelligent
drones. I mean,
how
far away are we from AI-driven?
About 2 years.
Right? I'm saying.
About 20. It's probably, well, look, I'm lying. It's probably already happening in the military. So let's say commercially, readily available to civilians, 36 months at best.
I mean, have you seen?
Yes, I have. Don't even bring it up because it freaks me out.
It's terrifying, yes. The things that these drones are doing.
It's ridiculous.
I mean, I saw a video recently where this was in the battle in the war in Russia and Ukraine. And there was a Russian tank. And on top of the tank, they have the ports that open up. And it's open, I guess, to ventilation. Well, there's this Ukrainian drone flying around. It sees that. It goes down, drops a grenade in that hole, kills everybody in it, and flies off.
Wow.
And you're like, I'm sure the guys inside were letting the air out. They had no idea.
I've never been in one. As a kid, I crawled in one, but it wasn't running, right? We just had to go hang out in them at like the plane
show. The Pate Museum or something like that. Yeah.
I can't imagine how hot those things must get riding around in those deals.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, of course, you don't dare stick your head up, but now you don't dare open it.
Man, these drones are changing the way battles are fought. Is the next war going to be our drones versus an extraterrestrial's drones? It's going to be like a drone war?
I think we... Dude, it might be. It's going to turn out exactly like the start of the Terminator does.
I think so.
That's it. That's what we're going to see with Skynet or whatever the heck it is now.
Yeah, this.
I will say this, though.
The AI's already taken over.
That Flight of the Navigator ship thing that they filmed as it passes by and all of that stuff, I can't help but instantly be like, that's a real one.
It does look
like what a real one would look like.
And that's what these people are saying. They're capturing them out of the windows of airplanes, whether it's a pilot or passenger. They're saying, hey, man, what is that? And they're capturing something.
How long till old boy that with the lights, what's the guy's name? The doctor, Stephen Greer. How long before Greer heads out offshore?
I think he already does do that. Then they do like the thing you can join $5,000.
Yeah, but I mean them. Way out. Like, you know what, where they were doing a bunch of the practice runs, the military was like, go out to where they're finding all that stuff. Cause sooner or later, there's gonna be people with Elon Musk money that decides that's what they're going to go look for.
Yeah. What's the movie director, James Cameron or whatever?
Isn't he
underwater exploration.
Yeah. He was the Titanic stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Send him out there. Let them find it and film it. That'd be the best one to send. He's that kind of guy. I'm sure he's listening. Hey, James, what's up, man? Go ahead and head on out. You can holler at me and Kyle. We'll go. Well, Kyle will go. I'm not going to go out there. I'm afraid of the ocean.
Man, well, that's because you're smart. Right? Yeah, like I remember when
ocean
I was young.
Beasts don't get you up here.
People would make fun of me for being scared of heights. And I'd be like, they'd be like, oh, you're scared of heights? It's like, it's called being smart. That's what it's called. Yeah, I am.
What do they always say? It's not the fall. It's the sudden stop. Yeah. That's the worst part.
Yeah. If you're afraid of the ocean, you're a smart person, folks.
I'm scared.
If you're scared of heights, you're smart.
It's the monster soup.
Right, Cam, what do you got planned for the rest of your week? I know you've been watching the Stanley Cup Finals.
Dude, I blame you for all of that. I've been staying up to ridiculous hours watching overtime games of all the playoff games, all because of you.
I don't understand why they got to start games in Central Time Zone at 9 p.m. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. I get it if it's a West Coast team. But two teams that are located in the central time zone starting at 9 p.m. just so they can do a doubleheader on TBS. It's frustrating.
Why does it got to be a doubleheader anyway? How come we can't just like...
spread it out?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. Start the games earlier?
Yeah. I mean, come on, man. People, I'm old.
People have DVRs. You know, people can tape it. We've been able to tape... I remember taping stuff on VHS.
Listen how old this guy sounds, right? He's complaining about staying up late and he's saying people have DVRs, folks, and can... tape it.
Yeah.
You hear that? Tape it.
Yeah. It's just old.
Hey, people, tell me how far you used to walk to get to school.
It's an old terminology.
It was uphill both ways.
I was at a guy's house. This is No BS.
Here he is bragging again. I've been to a guy's house too.
No, a couple weeks ago I was doing an appraisal. This guy had a room the size of your living room filled with nothing but VHS tapes. This guy.
Did you get out of there as fast as you could? Because first of all, were they like video, like real videos or like stuff that he had filmed himself?
No. Like we're like store bought movies.
Wow.
VHS. He had the, I mean, it's like he bought a Blockbuster that went out of business. For all I know, he might have owned one, but it was pretty impressive.
You know what's really sad? That's like having a whole room full of Beanie Babies right now.
Yeah.
Like those tapes are awesome. You could probably use them to, I don't know, keep a fire going.
It was cool to see, though.
It is cool.
You just don't see that stuff no more.
I still have some. I've got them stored in my storage room, but I still have a box of VHS.
I'm sure I have like home movies and stuff.
No, I've got like Black Death. I got like a bunch of hunting videos the old school, like the original videos of Dan Fitzgerald.
You like Back to the Future 1 and 2.
Oh, I've got those. I got, of course, all of the Indiana Jones.
Indiana Jones, the new one's coming out.
Dove.
Are you ready for the new one?
Yes, I am. I've watched the trailer a few times, and yes, I am extremely ready for the new one.
Me too.
It's one of those, that's the guy, look, we've said it before, I'll say it again, I could have watched one of those Indiana Jones movies every year, man. I wish they would put him in a series, do whatever with Harrison as long as we got him, right? Because, look, I don't want to lose. Look, I lost Sean Connery, not Harrison Ford, man. That ought to be like a worldwide holiday. I feel bad.
Yeah.
That's Indiana Jones, man.
Man, it's going to be awesome. If you have any stories you'd like to share with me and Cam, email the show, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the show, 888-393-2783. Before we get out of here, let's not forget about our wonderful sponsors, AG1, folks. If you're looking for a simpler and cost-effective supplement routine, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. Just go to athleticgreens.com/EXPANDED. That's athleticgreens.com/expanded. Check it out. And Lumi Labs.
If you want to get some free shipping and 30% off your first order of the best gummies you can put in your body, you're going to go to microdose.com. Use the show code EXPANDED. All right? Put that in. You're going to get free shipping, 30% off your first order. Everything's going to be in the show notes. It'll be done easy for you right there. That's how we'll take care of it.
That's about all the time we have for this episode, folks. Till next time, I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.